Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Friday, everybody. And what a happy Friday it is, because we are a little over 48 hours away from an NFC title game featuring your Detroit Football Lions. In a sentence that I never honestly thought I'd utter on this radio program, your Detroit Football Lions are a mere 60 minutes away from playing for a championship. And quite possibly nobody is more surprised by this than I am. Honestly, when these playoffs started, I did not anticipate that the Lions would be playing in the NFC title game and facing off against San Francisco for the NFC title. But then again, I also didn't think he'd be playing Tampa Bay in the divisional round. So what do any of us know, as it turns out? And today, I really just kind of am curious as to where everybody's heads are at going into Sunday's NFC title game. How confident are you, or how concerned are you? What's your biggest point of confidence? What's your biggest point of concern? Because there are certainly reasons to be concerned when it comes to matching up against the best team in the NFC. This is a team that, well, we know a couple things about this team. They are probably the hottest passing game going in the NFL right now. No way around that. The rushing attack is also about as good as it gets. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. The passing offense, I mean, what more can be said? They're first in about every possible metric in passing. Passer rating, yards per attempt, success rate. They're really, really good. The thing is, though, when Brock Purdy is, when he's on a roll, there's no stopping the dude. When he's not good, he's really, really bad. And San Fran's not the greatest at giving up or preventing pressure on the QB. The thing is that Purdy also gets rid of the ball particularly quickly, so that becomes an issue in and of itself. So there are certainly reasons, a lot of reasons, really, for concern with their offense, especially. Like, the biggest mismatch here truly is going to be your passing defense against their passing offense by a long shot. But I will tell you this, there are absolutely ways that you can win this. There are certain things that this team seems to be able or unable to stop, particularly when it comes to the running game. It's going to be interesting to see. Dan Orlovsky actually pointed this out the other day on ESPN. Green Bay had a lot of success last week with the running game. Aaron Jones, you'll remember, ran for 108 yards on 18 carries. A lot of us were watching that game very intently, hoping it would be Green Bay that we'd be facing. But as was pointed out on ESPN by a guy who once ran out of our end zone, sorry, you're not going to live it down, man. That's just all there is to it.
No.
It's particularly the setup that worked out well for them was something that Orlovsky called a pin and pull blocking technique. Basically, you have a skilled player run down, pin the edge, while an O-lineman pulls outside the tackle box and opens up a run lane. You have your other skill guy run across to block your edge rusher. And Green Bay had a lot of success with this. And the Lions can too, because you have the skilled players that can pull off those blocks. You have the kind of old lineman that can do the pulling. And you have the kind of speedy running backs that can get outside quickly. Like, that's exactly the kind of thing I can see Jahmyr Gibbs pulling off quite well, that I can see your other skill players be able to successfully execute for you. If you can do that, you can open a lot of gaps for your running backs, and you're going to gash that run defense pretty good and put up a good 100-something. Like, if you can put up over 100 yards on the day, if you can get to 125 yards, I feel like you can absolutely win this thing. The other thing is very much going to be staying aggressive on third down. I mean, this is a four-down team. We've talked about it a lot. Like, Dan Dan Gamble has become Dan Gamble for a reason.
Yes, he is.
But here's something interesting that might find you not having to go to fourth down as much. The Niners are dead last in yardage given up due to penalties. They're giving up an average of 56.4 yards of penalties per game. And a lot of that comes down to third downs. Like, they have really bad timing when it comes to when they take penalties. They had 6 penalties for 83 yards against Green Bay. And 2 of those penalties came on pass interference penalties on third and long. And there is your key to extending drives against this team. Take some of those deep shots against that San Fran defense. Because oftentimes, at least twice against Green Bay, it worked out that when you go and take that deep shot, they get really aggressive on their secondary and end up committing a lot of pass interference stuff. And those are spot fouls. That's going to give you... That's going to place the ball where you draw the foul at. That's going to be, you know, just basically bonus yardage being given up. And as we mentioned, they give up a lot of it. Like, if you're in kind of a tough spot, if you're in a third and long situation, don't be afraid to test them downfield, because the Niners get very over-aggressive and they end up taking some really nasty penalties as a result. And that's the kind of thing that can extend some drives for you. The other big thing, obviously, is going to be, running the ball. And we talked about the pin and pull stuff. But by and large, like, even as a general rule, Montgomery and Gibbs have been a top 5 running back duo this season. They're averaging over 2.5 yards a carry per rushing attempt. They have a combined 911 yards after contact. My apologies. It's 2.5 yards per carry. Not great. 2.5 yards after contact. Like, these guys have been really good at getting out of trouble, getting out of tackles, making contact, and still managing to fight their way forward. And that's going to be key here, because you can absolutely... use that to your advantage. And as far as the Niners go, they've had a lot of success against the run, but there haven't been a lot of teams running against them. They faced fewer rushing attempts than anybody in the NFL. So that kind of contributes to things somewhat. They haven't faced a duo like Montgomery and Gibbs by and large this season. And Gibbs, having really just come to life in the second half of this season, has gone a long way in really solidifying that attack. So that's going to be something to keep an eye on. And the other big thing, turnovers.
Turnovers.
If you can keep Jared Goff from choking up the ball, you can absolutely do some damage here. Like, that's going to be the biggest key. Getting over 100 yards rushing, limiting Goff to preferably 0 interceptions. Because, yeah, the Lions have turned the ball over 3 times in the last 5 weeks. But their defense has forced 10 turnovers, and you ended up going 4-1 in that span. Arguably 5-0, but, you know, we can talk about that. But the Niners have been pretty good in limiting the turnovers, but they were, in their 4 losses this season, a -9 turnover differential. They forced 4 and turned over the ball 13 times, including 9 of Brock Purdy's interceptions on the season. When you get pressure on him, he does tend to be a little more careless with where he's throwing, and that's where most of your interceptions come. If you can generate pressure on him consistently, and that's going to be huge for this Lions team.
I think they could do that with Aiden Hutchinson on our side. I think I want...
Having a healthy James Houston's going to help too.
Yes, I want Brock Purdy to know Aiden Hutchinson's cologne by the end of the game.
And I feel like you should be able to do that.
I want Brock Purdy to smell, 10 years from now, to smell the same cologne and just kind of go into a fetal position. You know?
Right. And here's the thing. Like, this team has not... with the pass attack being what it is, like, They have not had the greatest luck with pass protection. San Francisco is 14th in the league in pressure percentage and 26th in pass blocking per Pro Football Focus. And while, yes, Purdy does get rid of the ball quickly, the thing is, when he does get pressured, that's when mistakes happen. That's when the interceptions happen. If you can keep that pressure on him, generate that pressure, and keep it going, there's really, you know, only good things that can happen from that.
Yep.
So I am going to be interested to see how this goes. And there's a lot of angles we can play on this, and we'll probably play most of them over the course of the show today. It is going to be a very football-heavy day because, I mean, this is the biggest football game that we've had in Detroit in my lifetime.
My lifetime as well. And I saw the Tigers win the World Series. Have you ever? Oh, you haven't. That's right.
Thanks for reminding me about that. Yeah, like it's the biggest sports story of the year. Like, yeah, Michigan. Yeah, I know. Yada, yada. You won a national title, but you know, that happens a little more frequently, not by much, but then the Lions doing this.
Yeah.
So it's going to be kind of the focus of the show today. Don't worry, though. We will get into some unsolicited advice a little bit later on. And then, of course, we'll have to lay down our picks for this game before we get out of here as well.
Yes.
Much to do today. Stick around. It is happy hour. And we'll be back right after this. It is happy hour. He's Adam Harahuck. I'm Sean Cantwell. And with the Lions playing in the NFC title game this Sunday, there are a few things that I feel are kind of certainly worth pointing out or getting into, one of which being, are the Lions now America's team?
I've seen the graphics. I don't know if where they're getting their information from, but you've seen it on Facebook. I've seen it on Facebook where they show a map and they have like some New England states are rooting for the Ravens. You got California rooting for 49ers. And you got the St. Louis area for the Kansas Swifty Chiefs. And Then the rest of it is all Lions.
How much do you buy that?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, would Cleveland area have any ownership of the Baltimore Ravens, considering they were...
No, they hate the Ravens.
Really?
They hate Art Modell forever and ever for that.
But like, would they, by default, go to the Lions?
They don't hate us when it comes to football as much as you would think. Hmm. Mostly because, well, they're not a division rival. They don't even play in the same conference
do. That's true.
Now, what I don't believe is that for a second that Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Illinois are rooting for the Lions.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
Do you know any Green Bay fans that are rooting for the Lions? I can count maybe one.
I'm pretty sure the Green Bay fans forget that there's football after their team is knocked out.
Oh, they don't forget there's football. Let me tell you, there's nothing. Green Bay fans very much fit in the same category. You may as well add them to the apology list now. Green Bay fans fit into the same category as vegans and people who do CrossFit. They will tell you within 30 seconds, whether you asked or not, that they are Packer fans. You don't need to prompt them at all. They just blurt it out like they think anybody cares. Yeah, they absolutely are not rooting for the Lions. There may be a few divided loyalties up in, say, the Upper Peninsula, because that part of the state, which this still just gets me to this day, like that part of the state, they're very much Packers country 99% of the time.
Yeah.
A little less so on the eastern side, like one of the like big Lions diehards for a long time, like owns a bar on that side of the state. They are all like, there's more Lions fandom when you get more towards the Sioux and all that.
Gotcha.
But for the most part, it's Packers country up there. Maybe some of those guys might be pulling for the Lions, but Wisconsin as a whole, they're not. Minnesota ain't.
Nope.
There's no Chicago fan that would dare root for us.
Nope.
So I don't think that map in itself is accurate.
Yeah, I thought that was a little fishy. I mean, that'd be nice, but, you know.
How many people outside of California are rooting for San Fran? I don't know that there's that many, though.
L.A., I don't know. I think, I mean, they all clamored for a team. They got two teams, and then they just seem to not really care about football. That's the superficialness of Los Angeles.
It really, truly is. I mean, I feel like outside of Baltimore, you might have a few people who are rooting for the Ravens in other nearby states. Not anyone that has another AFC North team, though. Like, right. I guarantee you, the state of Ohio, we're rooting as hard as you can root for Baltimore to lose. Same with Pennsylvania, certainly.
Yeah.
Like, there is not a Steelers fan out there that wants to see the Eagles win a Super Bowl as inevitable as it feels.
Ravens.
Right.
You said Eagles.
Did I say Eagles?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That too, quite frankly. I mean,
yeah, you got a point there, too.
KC, that could go either way, because on one hand, I feel like people are sick of KC winning all the time. I feel like people are also sick of Taylor Swift and seeing her at all the games and hearing all the media coverage about her and everything she does.
Yep.
Counterpoint to that, the Swifties themselves.
Yes. Yes.
They are rooting for KC hard, and there's probably a lot of those
all through the country. The world, probably.
Nashville's probably rooting pretty hard for...
There you go.
So I don't know that it's... I feel like our particular sphere of the world and a football fandom that we see, you're not going to find a lot of people rooting for KC for the reasons I mentioned. But the counters to those reasons, well, the counter to one of those reasons, I feel like almost, if maybe not outweighs, certainly comes close to matching the hatred that they're getting from so many corners.
Yeah. I mean, I know when it comes to the Stanley Cup Finals, if the Wings aren't in it, I'm definitely rooting for the team that's never won it before, the team that has had a rough time. I'm not going to root for a team that, Vegas or Pittsburgh, that's been there a lot. I'm going to root for the underdogs.
And we are the last team in these playoffs that has never won a Super Bowl.
Right.
So I guess there's something to be said for that. But from this poll from SB Nation, who are NFL fans around the country cheering on to win the Super Bowl? 47% of them say they're rooting for the Lions. Chiefs are a distant second with 20%. Niners, 17%. Ravens, 16%.
Yeah, but that's less than half of the country, so you can't really say you're America's team. There is no such thing as America's team.
Yeah, I thought we all established with the Cowboys that this is really a mockery more than anything.
Yes.
Because most of America has been rooting for Dallas to lose for at least the last quarter century and probably longer.
Them and their annoying star.
Yeah, I assume that's just a rating.
Yep.
One star out of five. Now, when it came time to talk about the preferred matchup for the Super Bowl, the highest vote getter, with a whopping 33% of the vote, mind you, wanted to see the Chiefs versus the Lions.
Really? That'd be interesting.
And maybe it's because they think that the Lions have a better chance of beating the Chiefs. When you look at the regular season results alone, and this kind of segues into something I actually kind of wanted to also get into, who are you pulling for in the AFC title game? For me, for as much as I don't really want to see the Kansas City Swifties move on, I feel like the odds of beating them are better than the odds of beating Baltimore.
Yes.
We faced both these teams in the regular season.
And we lost to Baltimore and won against Kansas City.
We got stomped, destroyed by Baltimore. It was like 34-6. It wasn't even close.
Yep.
And KC, you managed to beat on the road.
Week one.
In their home turf.
Yep.
Neutral field. I honestly like your odds. Like, in Vegas, like, you're going to have arguably a pretty equal contingent, I would think, of Lions and Chiefs fans. Because, I mean, yeah, you're going to have the Swifties who want to go out to Vegas. Vegas also has a pretty significant...
A lot of the Swifties can't get into any of the casinos because they're too young.
Well, that is also true. But you have a decent contingent of Detroit people in Vegas as well. I mean, there's a whole casino in the old downtown Vegas that is like dedicated strictly to Detroit and Detroit themed teams. They have an American Coney Island there, actually.
Wow.
Like, so there is, I would imagine, an equal amount of support, and it might actually, the edge might favor the Lions there. Like, it's not going to be it's not going to be an actively hostile crowd.
No.
For that game, if it's Lions Chiefs. Really, for any team, I don't think anyone has a great advantage in other than San Fran. If they were to make it, they'd probably have, because you'd have more fans close because you're geographically closer and whatnot. Now, from which Super Bowl matchup would be the most fun? Chiefs, Lions, of course, ranked first. Sure. Lions, Ravens after that, which I don't feel like that's going to be, it'll be fun for us because the Lions would be there.
Yeah.
But I also don't feel like it's going to be fun in the sense that, oh God, we're going to get killed.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun first period, first quarter, and then that's it.
What apparently nobody wants to see is a Niners-Chiefs matchup. That got 13% in this poll.
Yeah, that would be that'd be kind of annoying.
And here's the other interesting thing. And again, this is all, you know, a popularity contest, really. But you think NFL fans don't have a lot of faith in the Lions? You'd be wrong about that, too. 51% of NFL fans think that the Niners will win the NFC Championship. That's more even of a split than I expected.
Wow.
But yet, somehow, here we are. I'm not surprised that you're the favorite team of the other fan bases right now, because, I mean, who doesn't love a good underdog story?
Right.
And if there's one thing that we can say with pretty well absolute certainty, is that there is no underdog story in the National Football League that could possibly compare to the Detroit Lions. Okay. It is Happy Hour at your local alternative, Solid State Radio. It is Happy Hour. He's Adam Harahuck. I'm Sean Cantwell.
Hey, what's going on?
And let's take a break from football for a little bit to do our favorite bit where we get to judge people because we're just so good at it.
Yes.
It's once again time for Sean and Adam's Unsolicited Advice, where real people with real problems send real questions to real advice columnists. Unfortunately for them, we get our hands on them, we intercept, and I think we give better advice than the people who actually get paid to do this for a living.
I'm feeling extra judgy today.
Sure, a few lives may be ruined in the process, but that's just the cost of good advice.
Can't make an omelet without breaking some eggs.
Exactly. So let's dive in, shall we? Dear somebody who cares, a month ago, I reconnected with a woman, Fran, I have known since 7th grade.
Uh-oh.
We're both divorced, I 20 years, her 4 years, with grown children and live 90 minutes apart. We've enjoyed hour upon hour of telephone conversations and have spent 2 weekends together. My problem is, Fran has a large, high-energy dog that has free roam of her home and her bed. Goliath travels with her virtually everywhere she goes, even when she visits me. Goliath is good-natured and extremely fond of me, but I don't have pets, nor do I care to have her dog jump onto the furniture and sleep with us in my bed. She thinks it's cute, but Goliath sheds black hair all over the place, including in my bed. I have white bed linen, so the contrast makes it all the more obvious. I care deeply for Fran and will likely be in an exclusive, meaningful relationship with her for a long time, but I don't want her dog to be a reason for anger and frustration. How do I politely enforce any restrictions on her beloved pet without possibly creating friction between us over Goliath just being a dog?
Well, what happens is you wait till she's asleep and Goliath has got to go outside to use the potty, and you just let him out the front door, not the back door, and dog runs off. Oh, I don't know what happened. Sorry, Goliath. I don't know, honey. Come here, Goliath. Nope, he's gone. Sorry. I have no idea where he went. Man,
Happy
I feel terrible about
Happy
this.
Hour does not encourage you to let people's dogs out of their houses.
You load them into a car, drive them about 40 miles in one direction, let them out, and there here's your new home. You know, see you later. Oh, honey, I have no idea. I am heartbroken about Goliath. Anyway, back to bed with us. No, I mean, it sounds like everything's perfect except for this dog, and he needs to compromise, and she needs to compromise. Keep the dog off of the bed. I mean, I think that is a very simple and easygoing compromise on his part. If he was to say, listen, you want to bring this caffeine-fueled dog into my house, that's fine, but here's my rule. Stay off the bed. And if she can't handle that, well, then what other, you know, they're not going to be able to have a meaningful relationship because it's going to be her way or the highway.
See, I think you're already SOL, I think. And not same old Lions either.
Oh.
Because in my experience, people who have dogs,
mm-hmm.
I mean, animal people in general, but especially dog people,
mm-hmm.
they're typically pretty unwilling to compromise between, you know, when it comes to matters of this sort. Like, it's you accept me and my dog the way we are, or you can hit the highway. That is how that goes 90% of the time. If I was not an animal person, Rachel would not have married me.
Right.
that would have been an issue because, you know, the cats do occasionally, well, the one cat that doesn't avoid everything. Like, will occasionally sleep on the bed with us. Her dogs, when she was still at her folks' house, her dog would do the same. And I'm fine with it. I mean, that's, you know, whatever.
So, I mean, that doesn't make sense here because you guys are all fine with it. Everybody's fine with it. But let's say you did have an issue with it. Not a problem, an issue with it.
Would have dumped me. I'll tell you right now, she would have dumped me.
Honey, when I'm over, can the dog not sleep in the... Hello? I think our phone got disconnected. I think you might have been driving through a tunnel. I said, could the dog not be... Hello?
The phone just keeps cutting out. I don't know what's going on here.
It's so weird. It sounded like a hammer being driven into the phone.
Craziest thing. It sounded like she actually actively threw the phone on the ground and just smashed it into a million pieces. Amazing. You can tell that, you know, from the phone signal, but okay.
Yeah. Right. We were doing a video call, and all I saw was the back of the toilet and a flushing sound, and then disconnected. Yeah. No, I mean,
like, animal people, as a general rule, it seems like, are usually fairly, I don't want to say inflexible, because that's probably not an entirely fair way to put it, but, I mean, they very much treat their animals as part of the family, which they are.
Sure, absolutely, but let's say, I mean, maybe this is apples to oranges, but let's say she's a smoker and he doesn't smoke in the house. So I hear my rules, you know, don't smoke in the house. She would probably adhere to that. Let's say she brings her kids over or whatever, and, you know, here is, you know, my favorite book collection. Please don't touch my book collection. I think that's, I mean, it's those simple boundaries and having the dog. Maybe,
and that's why I don't invite children to our house.
That's right. Maybe get like a go up above and beyond, buy a nice dog bed to put on her side of the bedroom, let the dog sleep there. So he's still there, but he's just not on the bed. I think that is a more than willing compromise. And if she is still digging her heels in, well, then he has to make that decision. Does he want black fur over his bed and be able to, how do I put this gently, romance her? Or is he going to say, okay, well, you know, if you're not going to compromise on this, what else are you not going to compromise later on down the road? And maybe it's time for me to get back on Match.com.
It probably is time for you to get back on Match.com anyway. Like, I am a firm believer that animal people should not be in relationships with non or anti-animal people. Like, it doesn't work. It's not going... I mean, I don't think I know a single one of my friends that would be willing to, you know, not let their animal do, you know, live their life as they currently do for another person. I mean, I got a buddy who's got, not only has he got cats, but he's got, like, parrots. Like,
oh, God.
They're like oh, these old, like, 40-year-old birds we're talking
about. Birds here. Last a lot. People think, oh, I'm just going to get a bird. Birds can, especially like parrots, they can live 100 years. They're older than, they're going to die, you're going to die before they will.
Yeah. Like, you don't...
Beat you.
Like, you're just... It's not going to work out for you. Like, that has to be much, much like children, where you have to very much, I firmly believe, you both have to very much be on the same page on that sort of thing before you enter into any legal binding agreements.
Yes.
Same thing with animals. Yes. Like, Rachel does want a dog eventually, and I am entirely fine with this. I mean... While cleaning up after it does not sound like a particularly enjoyable thing to me at all.
No, it's
but
not.
But I've got no problem with the idea of having a dog eventually once we actually have a fence that's...
You know, enclosed?
Enclosed, not actively falling down, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
So, no, that's just a thing. Like, you probably should actually have this conversation at the outset, and you screwed up by not doing that.
Well, he's probably... thinking positively. He's like, well, you know, she'll come over, she'll bring this dog over, and I'll just say, hey, you know, maybe not put him on the bed. And then next thing you know, he dog's in between them, looking at the guide, panting.
And then just really rubbing it in.
Yeah, he's sleeping on the couch now. Dog's got his duvet cover all covered in black fur.
Yeah, it's going to happen. There is no avoiding, you know, fur all over everything when you get animals. That's just kind of the trade-off when you have animals. Like, we knew that there was going to be cat hair all over our pretty much everything when we brought these two in.
Yep.
And we kind of accept that because we love them, and that's just kind of, you know, It's part of the package. It's a package deal, man.
Yep.
There's no way around it. Let's do another one of these, shall we? Dear, oh God, not you two again.
Yes, that's us.
My wonderful husband of 15 years stopped using soap about 5 years ago.
What?
I am all for bodily autonomy, but this is seriously impacting my ability to get close to him. About 4 to 5 years ago, he stopped using soap after reading something about how it can disrupt a body's natural microbiome or something to that effect.
Oh, my God.
The result is his skin now feels a bit oily, and he constantly smells of low-grade body odor. It's only noticeable when you get really close to him, but I'm the person who gets close to him. He showers every day and is a generally clean person, but I'm starting to get grossed out and don't enjoy our skin-on-skin contact anymore. I love him more than anything and do not want to hurt his feelings, but I'd like him to use soap again. Bare minimum, wash his armpits. Any suggestions?
There's different lines of soap out there that, you know, are made with different things. See if you could talk to him. He's like, listen, you skank, I can't rub against you anymore, and if you want to rub up against me, we got to figure out how to get it to where you don't smell like taco. So let's take you to the store. We'll go to some of those
natural deodorants.
Yeah, holistic places, and maybe find some common ground. But you could knock the vulture off a gut wagon.
Yeah, that's a hard subject to broach with somebody, even the person that you were planning on spending the rest of your life with.
Listen, I mean, yeah, you're worried about hurting his feelings, of course, because you're a caring person, not you, of course, the writer.
Yeah, I'm not a caring person
you're
at
You're
all.
A caring person, you love him, and you really want to talk to him gently about it. But when it is about self-hygiene, that's rule number one. That is one situation we've talked about bullying in schools. I think this is one situation where bullying pays off. Yeah, if I had a kid sitting in a classroom and making everybody around them dry heave, yeah, I want my kid bullied. Bully my kid.
Yeah, if it's going to make him actually use deodorant, I'm fine with it.
Say, hey, taco meat, come here for a second. No, stay over there, but, you know, let me listen. Let me talk to you. It's called soap. It's not expensive. Use it. It's called deodorant. Deodorant, if you speak French. Put some on.
Yeah, these are not people that I can...
But it's natural. No, it's not. No.
It, you know, there are a lot of things that are natural that we don't necessarily
human beings can't clean themselves like other animals can. So we need soap and water. Water just moves things around. It bounces off the grease that your body naturally creates.
Right.
And it doesn't work. You've been to health class, you scumbag. Take a shower. Put in some soap, and then, you know, then you get some romantic time.
Yeah, that's basically what you do. You withhold it until he agrees to finally do that.
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That I feel like has to be the option, because, like, you can't just, like, it's actively grossing you out to touch this, man. That's a problem. And that's a huge thing for me. Like, I can't do, like, you got to wear deodorant. You gotta actually wash with soap.
Yeah.
Like, there are no negotiables in this. The natural deodorant, whatever. I don't buy that either. Yeah. It don't work.
No, it doesn't. And there are some people who, they don't themselves require that much deodorant because everybody's got their different brand. You know what I'm saying? Of body odor. It's like some people, they go outside for 5 minutes, they come back and they smell like liver and onions. But then there's some people that, you know, just a little bit of deodorant, not Axe body spray, 14-year-old boys. Actual deodorant.
Yeah, the actual deodorant stick. Sorry. You do have to do that.
Yeah, you have to do that. But there's some people out there that, you know, they don't have to put on as much as... you learn your body. You learn what it takes. By the time you are in a committed relationship like this guy is, figure it out, dude.
Not that hard. Shouldn't be that hard. And, you know, it's interesting. Like, the people, like, who use the natural deodorants, like... We all know they don't work. Like, well, I guess you just get used to the body's natural scent. Like, no, I don't.
No,
that doesn't happen. I put on deodorant and shower every day. I expect you to do the same.
Yes, yes.
Like, that's one of those things where, like, I don't. That relationship would not work for me. Like,
cause,
that's
because, you know, and I hate to because
I'm sorry.
I'm guaranteeing there's probably somebody eating right now. If to that person, I apologize. But could you imagine? You know, his rear end is very ripe.
Yeah.
You don't know soap's getting in there.
Yeah, there's no there's no soap getting anywhere. I'm sorry. You shouldn't feel like kitchen grease or smell like it. That's an issue with a capital I.
Yeah.
So
show up to bed with a gas mask on. Maybe he'll take a hint.
Right? Like there's no particularly easy way to approach that issue. There just isn't. Like,
oh, it sounds like she has tried, but it's not working.
You got to be blunt.
Subtlety is not your friend in this set. You got to come.
You got to be about as subtle as his body odor is.
Hey, you smell like burnt radishes. Come here. I'm going to take you out back. We're going to turn the hose on. It's going to be cold, but you know what? I'm fine with that, and I'm going to hose you down.
Sometimes it's just what you got to do.
Yeah.
Because when we get to the point where you're talking about you're repulsed to even touch your significant other, that's one step away from this relationship is over.
It's just going to be like you went to county jail. You're going to get hosed down. You're going to be deloused.
Yep. Probably should actually do that, honestly. We got it a break. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio. It is happy hour. He's Adam Harahuck. I'm Sean Cantwell. And there's still a little bit of football stuff yet to do, of course. We're going to do picks coming up.
Oh, yeah, we got to do that.
We'll talk a little bit more about this weekend's matchup and the possible consequences of the other games and so on, or the other game and so on and so forth. But I think Adam would probably kill me if I didn't give him the opportunity to do this. Maestro of the music, please.
Your Detroit Red Wings played host to the Philadelphia Flyers last night, and they weren't very gracious hosts. Shut them out. Alex Lyon with the shutout. First star of the game, 30 saves.
You'll just hate to see it, don't you?
No scoring in the first or third period. The entire game was played in the second, I guess, where you got goals from your captain, Dylan Larkin, for his 20th of the season. Moritz Seider. He hasn't scored in, I can't remember how many games. It had been a drought for his sixth of the season.
Bit.
And then Andrew Kopp, shorthanded for his ninth of the season. You got an assist from Michael Rasmussen and Jeff Petrie. You had Klim Kostin and Nicholas Dallaire. They had some male bonding.
Something like that.
18-37 in the second period. They both got fighting majors and unsportsmanlike conduct.
Oh, that's nice. I mean, isn't this supposedly what you signed Kostin for, though, was scrappy?
Yep, and then he decided to get another unsportsmanlike conduct with Garnet Hathaway as his dance partner at 1940 in the third period, just to kind of cab things up.
Love it.
I mean, Philadelphia, they're probably getting frustrated at that point, so they want to mix things up, and Kostin was more than happy to oblige. But yeah, that's why you brought him in, and they need some more players like that. But it'd be nice to get to some players who can scrap and score. But I realize they don't make too many of those anymore.
Well, I mean, from what I remember, Kostin's not the. I mean, he can score.
Yeah,
and it was necessary because I mean Hathaway and Dallaire were really just going out there and playing a little bit dirty.
They were headhunting.
They absolutely were. And then it was really rather nice to see Kostin going back there and taking up for his guys and going in there and being that guy that's not going to let Philly push him around. Like, you need that sort of thing, and we talked about it so much.
Yep.
It's good to see that happening. Kostin, for what it's worth, does have 3 goals and an assist thus far this season.
The Wings only had 17 shots on goal. They were able to pull out the win, but with only 17. I guess they just like, oh, well, that's all we needed. 17 shots on the goal. That's not good. They really kind of lucked out. I think not having Carter Hart between the pipes for the Flyers really helped out in the Wings' way.
Maybe a little bit, yeah, because he's gone for those mysterious personal reasons.
They're not very mysterious now. We're learning more and more, and it's not good. All those players are in no-no land.
Yeah, you wonder if some of those guys are going to be allowed to come back. Like, are we talking, do you think we're talking suspension, or are we talking like permanent exile from the league?
I'm thinking probably some of them might be having to play in a prison league.
It kind of seems that way. I mean,
Canada doesn't mess around with that kind of stuff.
No, yeah. Hockey Canada already had to do their payouts over the thing. We're talking criminal trial now.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Some guys will be going away for a minute.
Now, the Wings were winning a lot in the faceoff. 62% in the faceoff circle, 34 wins as opposed to 21 losses. Nobody scored on the power play. And Philly outhit us, but you kind of saw that coming. That's just the way Philadelphia Flyers has made their bread and butter is and hitting 14 hits to 9 delivered by the Red Wings. So now they have the night off today. They play the Vegas Golden Knights, and then that is it into – oh, no, wait a minute. They're playing on the 31st. Excuse me.
Yeah, we're going to be at that game, sir.
We're going to be at that game, and then that's going to be it for the All-Star break. And it sucks because number 88, he's on IR, probably won't play that night.
It's looking that way. Like, Kane, they were talking about, like, Derek Lalonde had said earlier in the week he thought there was a chance that he might be back before the All-Star break. But, well, All-Star break starts after Wednesday night's game, so it's not looking like, well, did you happen to see how long like he's put on a retroactive to what date?
I did not. They just said he was put on the IR, but yeah, you have to be out like what 14 days, from the start of your injury.
Correct. And his last game was on the 14th. So
it's possible.
It's possible. Like it's within the realm of possibility. Still, like those two things could still be true. That yes, he's on IR. Yes, he could still play before the All-Star break. Because if they put him like retroactive to like the 15th, you might be okay.
I mean, get him in that game on the 31st, and then he's got the rest of that time to recuperate. Maybe not expect him to be on the first line. Give him a little less ice time. But
it was retroactive to the 14th, by the way.
Okay, so get him out there.
He was skating yesterday, apparently.
Good.
For whatever that might be worth, like it was right that he is back on skates, if nothing else.
I mean, I have seen Patrick Kane play, but it was for the Blackhawks, so, you know, it wasn't quite the same thing.
Yeah, that is also true. So, a little bit of update on...
Good. I'm hoping to see him.
Yeah, we're all kind of hoping to see him. I mean, he's been very much, in a lot of ways, kind of the spark plug of this team. I mean, not only has he been very much contributing on the score sheet, but he has provided that... The veteran presence and the leadership, like he's very much become a clubhouse leader.
Yes.
Like
he was what Sam Gagner was supposed to be.
Right. Except that, you know, Kane also comes in having had real NHL success. And I mean, Gagner, give him credit. He's played in 1,000 NHL games, give or take.
Yes.
But
I like Sam Gagner.
And he's good for the role that he serves, but also he's not. He doesn't have the resume that a Patrick Kane does. Like, Kane's got multiple Stanley Cups and
Hart
he's got...
Trophy, Art Ross Trophy.
Gagne's just showed up a lot.
Yeah.
I apologize.
Perfect attendance.
Right. You know, the Patrick Marleau Trophy, basically. And to think they want to make him a Hall of Famer but just just for showing up.
Yeah, sure.
Do we have to put Marlo on the apology list now?
Probably should.
Little bit of, you know, we had a little bit of time here, so we can touch on the other thing. We did kind of mention it yesterday, but Salt Lake City, of course, is the new, if you can believe this, the latest target for NHL expansion.
That still dumbfounds me, but I mean, here we
like
are.
Like they've officially submitted a request for an expansion team. Like they are the first. The first team, I believe, since Seattle got in, Smith Entertainment Group has requested the initiation of an expansion process to bring a team to Utah. Because we've seen, you know, Nashville's talked about it, a couple other teams have talked about it, but thus far, nobody other than, I think the Utah group's the only one that's officially requested an initiation of the expansion process.
Yep. And we'll find out. They're probably going to be held to the same standards that Seattle was, where, all right, you have to sell these many season tickets and pony up this amount of cash, which is no drop in bucket. It was a lot of money before we were going to before we're going to grant you a franchise.
Yeah, like I don't know. I mean, the season tickets were certainly a consideration, but really, what it was the expansion fee, which is for the Kraken at least.
It was like $400 million?
$650 million. So we're probably talking close to $1 billion at this point. Because that was now, that was three years ago now.
Yep.
So is when they paid the final installment of that fee.
$700K probably, at least.
I would say probably even more than that. Because Vegas is, when they joined the league, it was $500 million. So it was $650 million for Seattle a few years after that. We're probably looking eight, maybe nine.
Wow.
We could be looking at $1 billion here.
Wow.
Like, that's the reason these teams are so supportive of the expansion thing is because there is so much money to be made in fees to do it. Like, that's ultimately, at the end of the day, the priority here is they want to make that coin. And it's really kind of hard to blame them for seeing that easy, quick windfall of cash.
Yep.
Just let a team in. And obviously, that's going to be paired with another team eventually.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're not going to have an odd number of teams in the league. They're not going to do that. So that's just going to mean that either the Atlanta group is going to happen. We haven't really heard a whole lot from any other.
We've heard that team. Atlanta wants a team, but I don't think they filled out any paperwork. There definitely hasn't been any money changing hands.
No, there's not. And that's kind of the thing. Like we have an ownership group in Ryan Smith in Utah who already owns the Jazz, owns their soccer team for whatever that's worth. Like we already see them bring this money and put their money where their mouth is, like, okay, we're willing to do this. Bring on the expansion. We'll pay whatever we got to pay. Let us do this.
Yep.
No one else has really come forward yet that I've seen for any of these other. I think it's still very much in the early stages of Anson Carter trying to round up some people with some money to make that happen.
Yep.
It hasn't got so far as we have a solid ownership group and a plan going forward. Like they're already like sketching out where they're going to do a hockey-exclusive stadium in Utah, which, I mean, yeah, they do need for their Olympic bid anyway.
Yeah.
Which, admittedly, is going to be part of the sell here.
Yes.
But no one else has really come up with particularly concrete plans as far as expansion. I mean, a lot of people think that, certainly a lot of NHL insiders think that there's room for more expansion. And certainly the owners aren't going to complain about it. And then you have, with the Ottawa Senators, they sold for $950 million not that long ago. They're saying it's not going to shock anyone if the next expansion is set as high as $2 billion per Pierre LeBrun over at the Athletic.
Wow, for a team, for a sport that is fourth in the major sports leagues. Wow, $2 billion.
Who would have ever thought? You're paying $2 billion for an NHL franchise.
That's crazy.
That was unthinkable probably even a couple of years ago.
That's the kind of money that a Bond villain would demand before setting off a nuclear device.
It really is. So there is still...
In unmarked bills.
So there is still possibly... there is talk of expansion, adding two more teams potentially. Certainly, Gary Bettman says it's not something we're focused on. Yes, you apparently have to do the head shake.
Yeah.
We think the 32 teams we have now are in great places. We like where we are. I can't ever say never to anything. It's ultimately a Board of Governors decision. And let's be honest, the Board of Governors, you're just going to give us $2 billion to add another team?
So, all right, cool.
We're in. Sounds good to us. But he does say we're not in the middle of or interested in starting an expansion process. And I don't expect that to be the case until the Arizona situation gets figured out. I mean,
that is the elephant in the room.
You have an NHL team playing in a 5,000-seat arena that's now had the government and the voters in Tempe basically tell you, nope, we're not interested in funding this. Well, we're going to find a site in Mesa and see if the voters will approve this. I'm actually not sure if they need the approval for the plans there because they're buying the land, a private site, I guess.
Right.
But you still kind of wonder.
Your state doesn't want you.
Your state doesn't want hockey.
What do you need as a hint that you're not wanted, move.
And it sounds like even if the Arizona thing ultimately relocates, they're going to be looking to expand back to Phoenix again if they do end up having to move the Coyotes.
Oh, my God. Why?
Do you think you're going to get a better ownership group that's going to have more of a clue? If that is the case, why haven't they stepped up yet and taken this thing over from the Marullos?
That's ridiculous.
I can't for the life of me say I understand it. I can't see there really being a great deal of logic behind it. But at this point, they're going to keep trying that, much like the Atlanta thing. They're going to try and try again and fail again.
Yep. And meanwhile, you'd have areas like Houston, where like, guys, we would love a team. We could support a team.
We could do a team tomorrow. We have an ownership. We have a stadium. We have everything we need. Just give us a chance. But because it's the NHL, we have to repeat the same mistakes over and over.
Yeah.
We got to hit a break. It is happy hour. We'll come back and close this thing off next. Solid state weather for the rest of your weekend. You're looking at cloudy skies tonight. Occasional rain showers with a low getting down to around 32. Areas of patchy fog as well. Tomorrow, more clouds than sun. Areas of patchy fog with a high of 40 and a low of 34. For Sunday, Lions game day. Cloudy skies. Temps nearly steady in the mid-30s. High of around 37 and a low of 30. Then for Monday, mostly cloudy, but you might actually see a little bit of sun. Really? Oh my God, I'd almost forgotten what that looked like. High of 37 and a low of 31. Then as we get into Tuesday, possible snow showers, but minor accumulation at best before about midnight. And then we have temperatures getting up into, well, possibly getting above the 40-degree mark for Wednesday and Thursday. Right now, 36 in Flint, 35 in the Tri-Cities, 36 in lovely downtown Lapeer under cloudy skies. We'll get back to the Lions up next because we've got some picks to take care of. But they're not the only team, of course, playing this weekend. The Wings back in action, as we mentioned. Tomorrow night, they're going to be taking on the Golden Knights. 8 o'clock game time because the Pistons, yes, that team. I keep forgetting they're a team, too. Don't feel bad. They are playing the Washington Wizards, who are almost as abysmal as they are, tomorrow at noon. I'd say attendance over-under is about 500, and I'm taking the under on that. They're on a six-game slide. Washington's on a six-game slide. The Pistons are just garbage. But one of these teams, I guess, has to win. We'll see. Well, someone will see how that goes because, damn right, I ain't wasting my time watching that tomorrow. Anyway, here's Bakar. Your local alternative is Solid State Radio. It's about that time of the week again. It is Friday. It's just about the end of the show, and it is time for the picks. Literally had the volume all the way down on my channel for that one, and it was still coming through like that. You like that, Adam?
Yeah, yeah.
It only gets louder when we get to Super Bowl Sunday. We have two championship games this week we got to talk about, and we actually have a little bit of time to discuss them because, well, we only have two games to pick.
Right.
We'll start with the AFC title game. The Baltimore Ravens, they come in as undoubtedly the most, best team, yeah. the favorite to win a Super Bowl, much less the favorite to win this week.
Right.
They are a 4-point favorite at home against Kansas City, a team whose season didn't start off particularly strong. They lost to the Lions in week one. And then proceeded to beat up on the Jags, the Bears, the Jets, and the Vikings, and the Broncos in fairly short order. They had a pretty weak schedule to start off the year, yeah. Other than the Lions, is what I'm saying.
Sure.
But they started to falter a little bit midseason. They took losses ultimately to the Eagles, the Packers, the Bills, and the Raiders before getting it together in the last couple weeks against the Bengals and Chargers. And then just stomping the Dolphins, who were a lot of people's pick to win it all.
Yeah, Dolphins had a good season.
And then pulling off the win against Buffalo in Buffalo, one of the hardest places to play in the NFL for, well, weather and insane fan-related reasons.
Yes, a lot of flaming tables.
Yes. So this is the sixth straight AFC Championship game for Kansas City. And this is the first one for the Ravens that they've been at home. Like, that's just not a thing that happens.
Wow.
Last time these two teams met was in Baltimore, and the Ravens won, but this is also back in 2021.
Okay. Wow, a lot of time has passed.
That it has. Do you want to go ahead and lay your pick down on this one?
Yeah. I don't know. We talked about it. If the Lions were able to move on, who would you want them to meet up with? And I'm still hoping it's going to be the Kansas Swifty Chiefs, but for the effort of the picks, I'm going to stick with what I've been doing. Nevermore, give me Baltimore.
I knew that was going to happen. I knew that was a thing all day long.
Yep.
You always call for this team.
You asked me out as formality, which I appreciate.
Yeah. Normally, I don't even ask you at this point because I just know which way you're going to go. So, I mean, they're absolutely it's going to be a great matchup. Like, you have about as evenly matched two teams as it gets. But here's the thing. KC still has the best QB in the league until proven otherwise.
That he does.
Chris Jones is the best big game defender that is still in these playoffs. And he's a guy who performs exceedingly well in the postseason. And, like, you've seen some of the big plays he's made. Like, Josh Allen has Khalil Shakir for a just guaranteed touchdown. And Jones comes and basically disrupts the whole thing. Like, he is a guy that can change the entire trajectory of a game by himself. He plays all across the D-line, but he's got 10.5 sacks this season. And, boy, just he's been the biggest component of what Steve Spagnuolo has been able to do with this defense. Jones has been just the anchor of that thing. Trent McDuffie's kind of come out as one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL. Like, if there's any team that could go in there and just dissect the Ravens' offense, it's these guys. And I guess bring on another week of Taylor Swift shots, kids. Give me the Chiefs.
Drew chiming in, and he is picking Baltimore.
I'm not surprised by that. It's probably a smart call on his part. So that brings us to the game we all really care about. The whole reason we're here this week, your Detroit Football Lions in San Fran taking on the 49ers. I've laid out the issues with the team. I've laid out all of the talk about how if you put pressure on Brock Purdy, you can possibly pull off a win here. I've told you exactly how you can gash this team with the run game. And I've told you what I'm kind of concerned about with this team, which is that passing game against a secondary that is weak on a good day. All that being said, Adam Herahawk, you have the mic, sir.
Okay. Lions, 31. 49ers, 28 in overtime.
Wow. I'm not going to lie. I didn't expect for you to pick the Lions here. I am stunned and kind of proud of you a little bit here, man. Not going to lie. All right. Well, I put my money where my mouth is, right? I've been saying that there is a path forward to beating this team. Green Bay showed you what it was last week. And I think that, you know what? The Lions, if you can keep Jared Goff from forcing turnovers, if that O-line holds up, and granted, you're missing Jonah Jackson, but you have Frank Ragnow still, who is an elite center in this league. If they can keep Goff upright, if they can keep him from getting pressured, if they can keep him from getting happy feet and going and just throwing picks, there's no reason that the Lions can't hang in there and, dare I say it, win against the Niners. Your final, Detroit Lions, 28, San Francisco, 24.
Drew chiming in, Lions, 24, San Fran, 21.
I think it's going to be a little higher scoring than that, but I can't fault them for it.
Nope.
I got to say, though, I can't say I agree with your assessment that this thing goes to OT, though, man.
Yeah.
Because this is where Dan Gamble really comes into play. He's not playing for overtime. You don't go, he's not going to go and play for OT on the road. I don't see that as being... He's going to be the guy who's going to be playing to win at the end. However that looks, ultimately, he's going to be playing for... He's not playing for a tie. He's playing to go ahead for the win no matter what.
Well, what I'm saying...
And in fact, that's because I have... You'll notice my score. They win by four. They're not going for a field goal at the end of this game. He's going for a touchdown.
Well, I'm seeing the Lions coming back from coming from behind, tying it up at 28, forcing overtime, and then kicking a field goal to win the game. That's how I see things going.
That's fair. I don't think you want to put that kind of hope in the coin toss, though. In the coin toss and in shutting San Fran completely out in OT. That's because that's going to be tough doing to keep them from scoring any putting any points at all on the board. Oh, man. If you can do that, I mean, they... God bless Dan Campbell at that point. Coach of the year, man. No doubt about it. But I just, I as much as I'd like to see it happen, I just don't realistically see that being the case. And it just will further add to the legend of Dan Campbell.
The legend.
There's your picks. And with that, we have a little bit of housekeeping we got to do before we get out of here afternoon. Yes, it's that time as we here at Happy Hour attempt to cleanse our souls for the week. Lord have mercy on us all, really. Happy Hour would like to apologize to Boomers, Gen X, the Millennials, the Raiders, the Rangers, the Ravens, Jimmy DeVolano, Salt Lake City, St. Lock City, Emily Ratajkowski, Groundhogs, Mitch Gill, Packer fans, Sam Gagner, and Patrick Marlowe. We're sorry! I think we about covered everything, right?
Yep, we did.
Probably owe a blanket apology to Sand Lake Broadcasting, really. That's going to about do it for us, but stick around a full hour of Michigan-made music, because that's apparently what Adam does here at 6 o'clock on this station.
Happy birthday, Michigan.
So what's on the agenda for tonight's Solid State Sessions, compadre?
I've got Grand Funk Railroad coming up. I got Blood Rune Sigil. So much. I don't even have my playlist in front of me. That is how
professional how this professional operation really is.
I'm just right on top of the ball.
Happy
today.
Birthday, Michigan. We forgot what we got you.
Exactly. You are a cute little mitten. You don't look 184, 87 years old.
You look a day over 185.
I've got, I was wrong. I've got Pop Evil, Grinder on the way, Gasoline Gypsies, Waylon Hannell, Blood Rune Sigil, Icarus Fell, and so much more. It's going to be a good time.
Good times will be had by all. Bring the kids.
Yeah.
Because this actually is like somewhat family friendly.
Yes.
On that note, we got to get out of here. Go Lions. All being well. Talk to you Monday at 3. Probably still hungover from the game. See ya.